Welcome to Are You a CSI Podcast. I'm Raven, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick. These are my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing Season 4, Episode 16, Getting Off. Original air date is February 26th, 2004. Director is Kenneth Fink. Writers are Anthony E. Zeiker and Jerry Stahl. And we begin today's episode with shots of the Vegas Strip. It's like stormy.
Yeah.
There's like,
and there's like a weird fade down shot.
Yeah. And before we follow this shot further, Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
A pretty respectable 36.
Okay. That's not bad. That's pretty good.
Pretty low for the opening scene. That's probably why we didn't get it higher.
Yeah.
A lot of shots throughout.
Yeah.
It's also weird because there wasn't really a cut in the opening scene. So I just had to like decide when I stopped counting.
That's fair, because it just sinks underneath.
Basically, as soon as you could only see bridge, you could no longer see like a hotel.
That's fair. Like, I think that's a fair spot to call it.
Yeah, and so that was still 6 seconds. It was a good long pull. But yeah, then there's a bunch of other inter shots throughout the episode.
Yeah. All right. So we go from the stormy Vegas Strip, which was funny timing, because I don't know if you had this weather event, but we had like a 5 to 10 minute storm here.
Oh, I had
like downpour, thunder, the whole to-do for like 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and then it just stopped and went away. And I was like, oh.
We had thunderstorm warnings for like 10 hours.
Oh,
we did get a downpour a couple hours ago.
Yeah.
But I drove to New Hampshire and back, and I drove through 2 cells of rain on the way up and 2 cells of rain on the way down.
Oh, no.
And then we got hit with one here. So,
yeah.
Those weren't that bad because it got through them really quickly and it was like sunny on either side.
Yeah.
So you're getting like sun showers and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We had the same thing here.
Yeah. It felt like Florida weather. Like when
you're
in Orlando and it's just out of nowhere, it rains for 10 minutes and then everything dries up 5 minutes later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really humid afterwards.
Yes. So we go from the stormy Vegas Strip and the camera shot essentially just kind of dips and we go underneath a underpass. We see a nice car driving through a not so nice space. And, you know, I think obviously I've seen this episode. I didn't fully remember this like opening scene. Like it took me a bit to be like, oh, right. This is like what's happening. But I think you're supposed to believe that they're looking for someone / something. Because like, why is this really nice car driving through this like very not nice area with riffraffs about?
As someone who narrates this episode, I'll tell you, my assumption was like, this guy is like crazy or on drugs or something.
Fair.
Or has a suicide wish.
Yeah.
Literally where my thought process was, it took a lot of the episode. And honestly, I get to the end of this episode and I was still kind of like not really 100% sure. I feel like I have an idea what they were trying to say was the reason why he was there. But yeah, it was kind of an interesting opening scene.
Yeah. So then we have Jim Brass and Grissom with the now dead person that we saw driving through underneath this underpass. And he's been picked clean. His shoes are gone, wallet gone. None of this is surprising. We go to credits. We come back to Catherine, Sarah, and I put new detective because I think it takes them a moment to say this detective's name. We just checked is in 12. Name. It's Caviera. Hold on. Detective Chris Cavalier.
Cavalier. I don't know.
Cavalier.
Yeah.
And they're in, and I am quoting from the show, listeners, quote unquote,
oh God,
tranny town, aka like where transvestites hang out.
Do you want to know something hilarious?
Yes.
They're in like a junkyard.
Yes, they're in a junkyard. Like
a bunch of cars.
Yeah.
I thought tranny was a referral to transmissions.
Oh, to transmissions.
I mean, obviously, they just keep going down this road and it became really obvious what they meant. But I was like, kind of laughing at myself, like,
I mean, that's fair.
I guess I think that word is so derogatory these days that I just didn't think that that's what you were talking about.
Yeah.
I also had to do a little bit of personal reflection because you're using the term I think to refer to transvestites, like
yes.
I was trying to think of what the adjective form of that is, but transvesticism or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to transsexualism, which, you know, would be an identity and or biological change that some of you might have. And I kind of forgot that, like, that was like a trope in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like this idea that there are transvestites out there.
Yeah.
I was like, today, I feel like most people would move beyond, like, would be, that is like so, trying not to be, I feel like I could offend every single person who identifies in any way, shape, or form if I say the wrong thing here. But like, it's almost like today, like, people are, wouldn't think that that's an extreme. But also, I feel like a lot of like people maybe who were transvestites were just unaccepted for other identities, and more it's far more likely for someone to just have a different identity.
Oh, I think so.
Or for a sure. flexible identity, yeah. Right? Where they change their fluid,
yeah,
in their decision. But yeah, this was a really weird, funny thing because they happened to be walking through this like graveyard of cars where there's like the engines are missing from half the cars.
Yeah, so you're like, oh, are they talking about transmissions? Not what they're talking
and then,
about.
Like, they're just, and then I was like, oh no, because I was like, they're gonna do such a bad job with this.
Yeah, you're like,
it's 2004.
Yeah, it's not gonna be great. God. So we're in this junkyard and they come upon a dead man in a tire. Sarah is thinking, like, did anonymous sex lead to anonymous crime? Catherine doesn't seem to really be buying this. And as Catherine's like kneeling down in front of this tire and the camera angle like is showing the tire and then like her in it and the dead person inside of it, David just like pops in to the shot. I don't know why I like loved this shot. David just was like, whoop. And it's like, oh, like, I don't know if like a hacksaw is going to cut this. And Catherine's like, that's why they invented Sawzalls, baby.
So David's like, we need a hacksaw. And I'm thinking to myself, why? And I was like, oh, rigor mortis or something must have set in. And because he's inside this tire,
yeah.
It's hard to get him out. But he's like a dead fish when they pull his body out because he's just an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
playing dead.
Person.
But I was immediately like, wait, was he handcuffed in there? So I spent like a good chunk of the episode trying to figure out if he was like tied up inside of this tire.
Yeah.
He was not. No, yeah. I think it was just like the idea. Spoiler. Just they had this, like, remember the freezer one?
Yes.
They're like, I had to get him out. And it's like, probably, I think that was the insinuation, but then because I showed him getting pulled out and he was like floppy and playing dead.
And it could also be, I think that's a very good theory and probably the correct one. I was also thinking that were they worried that if they like scooped him out of the, but then I guess they just scooped him out anyway. Yeah. I was going to say like compromising evidence. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like if they scooped the top of the tire, you know, looked at a bunch of evidence and like excavated their way down. They just like hauled him out of there.
Yeah. So never mind. Yeah. That doesn't. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I think you're probably onto something. So yeah,
I mean, it's impossible to play stiff board. You know, I don't blame the actor, the director or anything else. I just, that the whole thing was a little hilarious. It was just, it was like back to back. I don't understand this show, like this episode. Like I was like, I keep making the wrong assumption.
Yeah. I think it also, I don't think it meant to in this scene, but I think in a lot of scenes, the episode wants you to do that. I don't think this is one of those scenes, but I think there are scenes where the episode kind of wants you to do that. So the team, you know, as Catherine's cutting through the tire, Sarah's doing some investigation, they all come back together. And then David, this is solid. David quips in this episode. David is like, I wouldn't be caught dead in those shorts.
Yeah.
Because he's wearing the victim is wearing these like weird
heart shorts.
Yeah, like boxer shorts sort of things.
It felt like if you asked somebody in 2004 what a sexy pair of shorts for a guy was, that would be the answer you would get. Like a PA, go get a pair of sexy shorts.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, it tickled my fancy when David said this.
I have owned a single pair of satin boxer briefs in my life.
I mean, I guess I've had satin underwear, yeah. But I never, but I didn't like it because it was too, like, slippery.
I used to have satin sheets, but that was mostly because I didn't have air conditioning.
I just wanted
something good late for the summer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was like, but you do not want to combine satin underpants and satin sheets together because that is really a slippery.
That isn't really slippery.
But yeah, that was like, I don't know, real Spencer's vibes.
Yes. I agree. Yeah. We then go to a sex worker trying to work Warwick. That's a lot of like, I feel like that's a tongue twister there. He's like, hey, I'm working. Can't not interested. And I will say that this is a missed spot the guest star for me. This is Nick and I were talking about this a little bit before the episode. This is Deborah Wilson. She plays Divine. I don't think we ever learn in this episode that that's the character. I don't think it's ever like stated, but that's what the credit is on her IMDb. She's in a quadrillion things as a voice actor. Her IMDb just goes on forever.
She's also in Scary Movie 4, which is probably the only scary movie I haven't seen.
I didn't see Scary Movie 4. So she is, but when I saw her, I was like, no, I like recognize her, even though I know I've heard her in a million, I've like a lot of things, whatever. But she's in like 200 plus episodes of Mad TV. So I think I've probably just seen like shorts of it online. And then she's in, spoiler alert, she's in later episodes of CSI. So we're going to see Divine again. So just heads up, listeners, this is not our only time hanging out with Divine. So she does tell Warwick that she did not work the dead guy and he was no one's customer, which is very strange given that he was a good looking white guy in nice clothes and most people would try to make him a mark there. So she's kind of pointing out the like, yeah, it's weird. He came here and didn't pick up a sex worker.
And no one saw him. Right.
Yeah.
Like no one fragged him, tried to run him down, tried to pick him up. Yeah.
So Grissom approaches and at this point, his car hasn't been found. They're like, he wouldn't have walked here. Like, how did he get here? There's no car at the moment. Don't worry. We'll come back to that. Before we do, we're with Grissom with Doc Robbins. The victim has multiple stab wounds. Doc Robbins was also able to ID the victim as an Ed Burnell. And this was not his only brush with death because he had a double dose of cirrhosis and he had like half a liver grafted onto his liver. And this prompts a conversation between Grissom and Doc Robbins about addiction. And Grissom at this time seems to be a little harsh on the subject. And Doc Robbins is like, oh, so, you know, are you of the mindset that once an addict, always an addict, which is not answered in this scene.
It feels very un-Grissom like to think that, right?
It does, because he's normally very understand. I don't know if understanding is the best, because I think a lot escapes him, but I think
he's also very academic and like he'd be consciously aware that like that's not true. There are an enormous number of people, despite how difficult it can be, who get their addictions under control.
Very true. But we'll talk kind of this topic weaves its way through essentially the entire episode. So we'll definitely come back around to this. Before we do, we have Catherine guiding. I thought this was a nice scene. Catherine guiding Greg Sanders on scanning boxers. Not that like scanning boxers and finding semen is nice, but the idea that she's like coaching and teaching Greg Sanders in how to process evidence. So he does find semen stains and he needs to cut them out of the boxers and send them to himself in DNA to further analyze them.
I had two thoughts of the scene. One, it feels like the most perfect Catherine Greg scene. There's just always a cheekiness to their interaction.
There is always a cheekiness to their interactions.
And I think that their characters are sort of portrayed to both enjoy it.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it usually ends up in Greg being belittled and, you know, Greg making a sexual innuendo at Catherine. And they kind of avoid both of those things here.
Yeah, they kind of do.
Great. There's a bit of a maturity, which is nice. But we're still having that levity and stuff. But we're also like, they they were alluded, I think, in last episode, right? Greg is trying to learn. Like, they never really came out and was like, listen, Greg Sanders is training to be a CSI. They've just sort of been like alluding to it.
Yeah.
And but this is a really like great notion that, yeah, he's spending time, he's learning, he's doing stuff. But then I also thought, like, man, he's in DNA, right? Mm-hmm. Which, when we started this show, was probably pretty new.
Yeah.
And at this point, like, advancements have probably been coming really fast and furious. The idea that he's got the free time to also...
Yeah, to also be learning.
Yeah. I feel like he'd be inundated, and I keep waiting for him to introduce, like, a secondary DNA person who's helping to take some of his workload.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like it. It's like, okay, I see there's an arc here, and I'm kind of like... And I don't want you to spoil this for me or anything, but like, okay. I'm kind of like curious, like, are we going to get to the point where Greg is going to stop being the DNA guy and be one of the investigators? I don't know, but like, I kind of like, I'm interested to find out, you know, like, there's not been a lot of like, oh, can't wait to see what this story, I can't wait to see what they do with this. Right?
Yeah.
And so might be this scene, might be the highlight of the episode for me, which.
Yeah. I thought it was a lot, but. Yeah. I thought it was a really good scene though. And I did want to call it out because I did think it was a really good scene. We then have Catherine with Sarah. They're with the body pulled from the tire. They end up pulling a fiber from his nose. They're talking, was he possibly suffocated? They find silver paint underneath his nails. And then Sarah points out, like, you know what? He's pretty hairy for a drag queen. And then as they go to examine his makeup a little bit further, Catherine's like, I think he's maybe a clown, because we see kind of the outline of where his makeup was, and it's definitely not
big circles around the eyes and mouth.
Yeah. So we then have a very high individual who's involved in a single person crash, and Jim Brass and Warwick approach as like medical personnel and emergency personnel are pulling him out of the car, and they're trying to be like, did you murder this guy? And the guy who got in the crash is like somewhere else, like mentally, like he's just like not in the zone. And they're trying to like, why did you take his car? And he's like, 'cause I need to bag me some hoes. Like, just this whole character is so weird. I almost swore. And we don't swear on this show. I literally almost swore. I was like, don't say it. We'll get back to this character before we do. We have a Catherine and Sarah walk and talk into a clown agency, and they talk to the manager slash owner of said clown agency, who can't ID their victim because he books the face. He doesn't care what the person is underneath the clown makeup.
Blows my mind. He's never met half these people.
Well, he's met them, but he's met them in clown makeup.
Yeah, but like, someone doesn't come like, hey, on a Thursday and be like, listen, you owe me $50 from the booking last week. You know, they don't get in clown makeup every time they go to his office. They get in clown makeup every time they go to a thing. But it, again, it's just for the lulz, right?
Yeah, it's for the lulz.
I will say this is like kind of my miss spot the guest star of sort. Well, it's less a miss spot the guest star and more of a ambiguous spot the guest star. This is Paul Dooley. The character is Buddy
Ween.
Buddy Ween. I couldn't tell you what I know, but I definitely saw this guy. I was like, hey, I know who that guy is.
Yeah.
I've seen him in probably a bunch of different stuff. I couldn't nail it down. I looked at his IMDb like three times and I was like, I don't know. He's in some stuff I've seen. He's in stuff that I'm trying to remember if I've seen, but I thought he was going to be based on my initial reaction to seeing him, I thought it was going to be way easier to find like something I knew him from.
Yeah.
Could not. So if anyone else knows this guy or knows it from something, let me know. And some of the stuff he's been in that's bigger, I was like, I don't think I really know him from that. But as I told Raven, what's going to happen is 3 years from now, I'm going to see him in something and be like, oh, that's what I was thinking.
That's how I know him. So they also learn from him that there's the National Clown and Character Registry. So they borrow his book to see if they can determine who their victim is. We then have the man who was involved in the single car crash in the hospital, demanding pain medication. We learn his name is Jamal.
Yep.
he's a very white individual. Very white individual. I don't know if this is supposed to be a nickname. I don't.
Unlikely to have been a given name.
I would think unlikely to be a given name. It's not impossible, but it would be a little weird. But we learn from Jamal here that he was speedballing. So he doesn't really know up from down from when he was on drugs. And he ends up getting pain medication, kind of getting like a little worn down, a little loopy. And he's just kind of like muttering to himself, like, man's already dead. Like, what he need shoes for? And so Warwick and Chris are left to be like, was that a confession? Was that an insanity plea? Like, what is going on here? This leads us to Warwick with the smashed car. Greg Sanders approaches. As Warwick is checking out the car, he finds a condom wrapper. They're between the two of them. They're discussing, like, what was the motive here? Like, why stab him? And then Warwick finds drugs, question mark? He finds a tiny little plastic baggie with, like, little powder-y residue inside of it. So I put found drugs, question mark? We then have Greg Sanders processing said substance. Grissom enters, and Greg Sanders has to admit that he has never seen it before. All he knows is that it's an alkaloid, and he ran it through the specs, and it's not in the library, so they're going to have to do additional digging to find out what this substance is. We then go to Catherine reconstructing the face paint of their victim, and Sarah is comparing to the National Registry as they're doing so, and they find a match. They find Doodles. They find Doodles the Clown.
Such a good clown name.
It is a really good clown name. So this brings them back into the office with the clown manager. And he's the one that's like, yep, that's Doodles. And what is Doodle? I can't remember what the Doodles name is. Is he not even on the IMDb? How is Doodles not? Donnie Zanko is. Okay, Donnie Zanko is. But he's referred to as Doodles the entire episode, so I'm going to call him Doodles the entire episode.
I do like the spoiler. There's a character referred to as the Mime.
There is a character referred to as the Mime. We'll get to the Mime pretty soon. We learned that Doodles was working off the books because the last gig that the manager booked for him was like 2 weeks ago, but he's been dead less than 48 hours, and he was definitely in full clown makeup, so Doodles was taking some side gigs. We then have Grissom in his office. He's looking over some documents. Jim Brass enters. They're talking. And this is where we learn that the unknown substance is Ibogaine, which is made from a bark of a tree. It's a hallucinogen, but it can also sometimes cure someone's physical addiction. So it's not 100% going to work all the time, but it can help. So we'll definitely come back to the Ibogaine. Before we do, we're with Catherine and Sarah at Doodle's home, which this gave me the raccoon guy house vibes, because you just had clown stuff everywhere, and I was like, I get that you're a clown, but like, do you need to have clown stuff everywhere?
It's the Doodle's fun house.
It's the Doodle's fun house. And Catherine is finding it strange that they mentioned Trony Town again. She's like, isn't it weird that essentially all of his porn magazines features a bunch of jugs, and there's no man-on-man themed porn material here.
I don't remember what it was, but it was a great name for like a fake Playboy magazine.
It was. I can't remember what it was either, but I do remember being like, that was pretty
good. It was called like Playpen or something. But yeah, I was like, oh. I guess they don't want to use that. Like don't want to or can't use that.
Yeah, they probably didn't want to pay to have to use it. And as they're searching through his house/apartment, they're also listening to voicemails. There's a amorous woman on there. And then there's a very angry guy before they hear a taxi call to say, like, hey, I'm outside, you know. So
I looked at that call. It took me on the second watch to understand, where he's like, I get the irony
of me leaving you a message. I missed it on the first time, and I've seen this episode, so don't feel bad about it.
I was like, what does he mean by that? And I was like, and then on the second watch, I went, oh.
Yeah. We'll find out very shortly. Before we do that, we're with Grissom and Jim Brass. They're with the owner at a halfway house.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not this guy. I think it's someone else. Okay. Someone else is the later on the, not the halfway house. I would say kind of like a drug den later on. Best name character.
Gosh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, this is, I don't know if we even get this person's name, but he is walking them through the halfway house. They talk to Mindy, who is someone who is staying at the halfway house, but she's leaving. Ed got her clean. And then I'm going to be curious to get your thoughts on this. First, I guess halfway houses don't have to follow HIPAA protocol. I don't know.
I mean, they are not. I think here's what I don't really know. But I think my understanding of a halfway house is it is a living place.
Yeah. Right?
So they do not have a medical relationship with you.
Yeah.
They're not providing care. So they do not owe you any sort of health information privacy. Now, they might have other privacy rules, and typically people in halfway houses, the way I think of them is like we talk about them in terms of like they would go to jail or they would be in some other
like rehab
center.
Yeah.
And so there's often maybe a state involvement.
Yeah.
And so that often lends to the, if it's, especially if it's funded, then the state will often have rules that like you have to tell the police everything.
They ask
you questions. So like that was like sort of my takeaway with that is like I don't know what the rules are, and they could be different in every state, but B, that kind of sounds like the kind of thing they would like you void your you give up your rights in order to not spend your time in jail or something.
Go
here and it's like people who are on parole have less rights than people who aren't on parole when it comes to like police searches, right?
Yeah.
And so it could be something akin to that.
Yeah, you might be right. But I still find it odd that he's like, hey, come watch this video of Mindy when she first got here.
He doesn't need to throw it in their faces.
No. You know? And then the additional weird part of it is that, and I don't think that this was intentional, but both times I watched it, I was like, Ed comes off, the victim comes off as a weirdo. He sounds like such a creep in these videos, and I don't think that that's the intention of the episode.
Like a cult leader.
But it's just like, but she's just like, are you here to help me? And he's like, yes, I am here to help. I don't know. It's like so weird. I don't know. Both
it
times.
Is. The tone of his voice and everything is so bizarre.
It's so bizarre. I was like, what is happening here? So, yeah, we'll come back to this. We're with Catherine and the detective at a suburban home with parents, a mom and a dad. We learn that the mom hires clowns for special occasions. This time, though, they got a little bit more than they bargained for, though, because they got a smackdown with a mime. So Doodles the clown got into it with a mime.
I feel like, okay, there's two things here. First, we have a late-breaking missed spot the guest star.
Oh, okay.
Here at IMDb, I think that this is, he does not look like what he looks like now at all.
Okay.
But Dad?
Yeah.
Played by Joe Crust.
Yes.
The character's name is Al McGuire, which I think these are the McGuires. He's in Stranger Things.
Is he really?
Yeah. He's Finn Wolfhard's dad. He's like the nerdy dad with the big glasses who's always like reading the newspaper and not paying attention to what's going on when his kids are like chasing ghosts and monsters in his house.
I'm looking through his IMDb now. And I've seen almost all of Stranger Things. I never would have put this together.
Only because he looks like that in his IMDb photo with big blocky glasses.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what character is this? I was like clicking through as we were getting here. I was like, oh, he's the dad. Yeah, he doesn't look anything like that in that scene.
No.
He's in a couple other movies, which I've seen 21 Jump Street. I've seen Deepwater Horizon. I don't remember him in any of those. But yeah, definitely a short miss. It's about the guest star. If you recognize this guy, let us know. But I don't think I noticed the first time I looked on IMDb. Because I tend to only like look for the people who I think I recognize. Or something, and sometimes I'll scan like the actor names to see if I recognize an actor or actress's name. and didn't get that, but I've had the page open. I was staring. I was like, wait, why is that guy?
Like, wait a second. Familiar? Yeah, you're like,
how I clicked on it. Like, 28 episodes of Stranger Things. Yeah, he plays Ted Wheeler. Mike Wheeler is the name of Finn Wolfhard's character. I don't know why I refer to him as this human, as his human name.
As his human name.
I think, well, you know, Ghostbusters of Ghostbusters fame, Finn Wolfhard.
Yep. So
apparently some Scott Pilgrim miniseries. I didn't know that. Oh, it's a voiceover. Never mind.
Oh, okay. All right. And we also learn in the scene that the mom dropped Doodles off. The father went, took the kids out for ice cream because they were a little traumatized about the fight between Doodles and the mime, and the wife dropped Doodles off at home.
I have to admit, I immediately assumed the wife killed Doodles.
Fair.
I did not immediately assume the other thing.
we'll get there.
I was almost like, I feel like maybe I should have just assumed the other thing and not the murder, but because we're so concentrated on murder, isn't it?
Yeah, that was your focus. You were like, well, obviously she did some murdering. We then go to a mime harassing people on the street.
Also, like, what world are we living in where like a random dude comes to your house that you didn't invite to be there?
Yeah, you just let him go?
And you're like, you don't call the friggin' police.
Well, the dad tried to play it off saying, well, he gave me $100
I get what he said, but at the same time. I know. Like, your little kids involved. I mean, that's when you just knew something was up, right? Like, this
totally ended
up. But like, how come the characters in the show didn't be like, they should have been the ones being like, a guy comes to your house, gets in a fist fight in front of your children, and you take him you spend $100 on the ice cream.
Yeah.
So you had to go take him to, even though you had cake at your house.
Yeah.
That he destroyed.
And that he destroyed. That he destroyed. Yeah.
And like, if the guy gave you $1,000, then I guess, but like $100. Yeah. No, it was kind of, to me, I was like, my fishy sense was tingling. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I get they tried to play it off. They just did.
They did try to play it off. So we go to this mime. He's harassing people on the street. Sarah and the detective approach him. They get him to talk, get him to drop the mime app talk. And he's unapologetic in his hate for Doodles and why he hates Doodles, but he's like, I didn't kill him. Did not like him. Don't really care that he's dead. Not the one who killed him, though. And he's like, he's got two hookers that can prove that. He's like, don't worry, I have an alibi. So we then have...
It did remind me of the last scene where the guy was at his... Or the last episode where a guy had his kid as an alibi.
Like, yeah,
you just go get two hookers as an alibi.
Just get two hookers as an alibi. We'll find out that his alibi actually does check out. Before then, we're with Grissom and Jabras. They're approaching a house, and this is where we learn that Mindy's fingerprint was on the condom wrapper that Grissom pulled from the car, from the victim's car, and they talk to a very sketchy guy in the doorway. He does eventually let them in. They go to talk to Mindy, and she's obviously using again, and she's saying that like she tried so hard and Ed essentially got her to feel again, but she never wanted to feel. And as they're talking to her, Grissom spots a bloody knife and is like, you have to come with us, like we are now arresting you. There's a bloody knife like in your property. We go back to Sarah and Catherine. They are having another walk and talk. This is where we learn that the mime's alibi actually does check out. He has Polaroids of his adventure with the two hookers, so everything checks out. And
do you know that thing that can has a date and timestamp on it?
Date and timestamp on it. Yep. Maybe they held up a newspaper.
I mean, you give this guy $100. Who's to say you didn't give the
you could have given the hookers $100.
Yeah, hookers $100.
He calls them hookers. Yes.
Yeah, I was like, if all you're going to take is a Polaroid, I feel like your average sex worker would be like, sure.
Yeah, like, whatever. Like
whatever.
I've been asked to do worse things for less money.
$100.
Yeah.
I guess lying to the police is probably your average sex worker is probably not going to lie to the police for $100, especially when they tell you they're investigating a murder trial.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, this is not worth the heat.
Yeah. So we learn in the scene that when Greg Sanders ran the DNA from the boxers, that there wasn't just semen. There was also an unknown vaginal contribution.
I have a hard-hitting question for you.
Yes.
That I had watching the scene. Mm-hmm. Chain of custody, really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Collecting and processing your own evidence almost feels like a conflict of interest.
Could be.
But they do all the time. That was my second thought. Was like, but they do it all the time. Like, they'll do some weird lab experiment. Like, they'll do this elaborate scene where, like, somebody collects evidence and then does something and tests it and finds out a thing.
Yeah.
It's definitely okay in general, but it's almost like...
It should be, like...
Unaccredited CSI collect the evidence and then... Yeah. And then he processes it. Like, it's almost like you should separate those those cases when it comes to training.
Yeah, like have another DNA, have another DNA person, like, process that.
It'd be interesting if that ever came up in, like, any of your... I brought it up because I thought maybe you had, like, a true crime story or something like that had come up before.
I do not. Sorry.
But yeah, that was my thought process. I was like, wait, you collected this evidence and you processed the evidence and now you're going to test
it. And now you're going to test
it. As far as I know, there's evidence that doesn't exist.
A little dicey.
Like, I feel like that's, like, not that far for a defense attorney to say to a jury.
That's her. Yeah. That's a good point. We then go to Grissom and Jabras. They're with Minnie in interrogation. And from her, I think, blood work. They took some, I think, blood work from her that she has been using for a while. She wasn't just recently off the wagon. She's been using for a while. And they keep trying to get her to explain why she had the knife. Why did you have the knife? And she's sort of like talking in riddles and talking about being in a crater and just all these sort of like strange things. And she's just not answering the question.
Can you even like and miss evidence, like things that people saying while they're still under the influence? Like,
so we've had this conversation. In another episode.
Yeah.
I think we didn't. I think it was like someone that was very drunk. It was
a very drunk dad.
Yeah.
One of the episodes where like the girl, like it was a young girl and her dad was drunk or something. Maybe it was the one with the gun roulette, the gun Russian roulette thing.
Oh, I can't remember.
Or maybe it was a kid or something. It's like, remember they're at school and it's like, oh yeah, my dad's too drunk to come show up at school and they go to his house and he's still drunk.
Oh, that was the one that they practiced by smashing the watermelons. That's the one hammer in the construction zone.
The gun one, the watermelon.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm like, I feel like we've had this conversation. And I think our thing was like, I think this is really like rocky ground to stand on. Like, it's hard to say. Like,
And that was just a witness. This is a suspect.
Like, this is a suspect.
A confession out of somebody.
Yeah.
They don't know what color the sky is right now.
Yeah,
like they could no matter what they say. Like I feel like as a juror, I'd be like, I don't think that anything they said you can construe to be a true statement.
Yeah. Given their like altered state of mind, we go to Grissom. He's asking Sarah's help with a woman, which gives her pause. And then Grissom clarifies that he means like processing because there's a woman there, and he wants another woman to process her. So. We go to Sarah processing Mindy, and this was just like a heartbreaking scene. I don't know. This was a really difficult scene for me to watch because Mindy's like almost crying and she's like very frail and very emaciated. Vulnerable and emaciated. Yeah. And it was just like it was a tough scene on both watches. It was a tough watch for me.
She's completely naked, which is, I think, why they wanted Sarah to process her like another female.
Yeah.
But it's very very humiliating, dehumanizing kind of processing.
Yeah.
But obviously they're trying to collect any potential evidence, and she's being arrested basically for murder. So it's a pretty serious situation.
Oh, for sure.
But it's like you're also like feeling for this person who was so normal feeling when you first met them, right?
Yes.
They were a recovered, clean person. And now they feel like they've gone all the way backwards. And I think you're supposed to feel that way. I think you're
supposed
to feel like these are the horrors of addiction and substance abuse.
Yeah. So when she's done processing her, Sarah brings a sample to Grissom. And she notes that there's like, she has no bruising. Like she has like no signs that she was in a struggle, which doesn't seem to make sense because she's this tiny, 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 woman, and how would she have been able to stab the victim six times without incurring some sort of wound on herself? And then Grissom is like, oh, I I feel like I haven't seen you in a while, or I haven't seen you in a bit.
To Sarah.
And Sarah's like, you see me every day. And then like they just cut away. I'm like, oh, we're dropping like little hints back to our few episodes ago scene with them. We then have the family being the Doodles / Mime family house being escorted out of the house so that Sarah and Catherine can go in there and search it. And they find fiber consistent with the fiber that they pulled out of Doodle's nose. There's also one non-matching pillow sham.
Oh, yes.
We then have Catherine with the mom, who we learn had sex with Doodles. She likes clowns more than the average person. Likes clowns.
I think she likes clowns more than the average clown likes clowns.
This is true. At the same time, Sarah is talking to the husband in interrogation and tells him that his wife had sex with Doodles, the clown. We then see a reenactment or like a flashback of him smothering Doodles to death after coming home from taking the kids to ice cream and finding his wife in bed with Doodles, the clown. And we pop back into Catherine with the mom, and she's asking her, like, why? Like, otherwise, you did really well, like, cleaning this up and covering this up. Why would you keep the clown suit? And the reason.
Can that be the name of the episode? Why did you keep the clown suit?
Why did you keep the clown suit? The reason she kept the clown suit is because she then had her husband put on the clown suit. And evidently it doesn't need to be professional clowns to help this mother get off.
I want to know if he had to put makeup on.
They never answered this question.
I know, but
we're not. This question is not answered.
Or was it legally distinct or just steal Doodle's makeup?
Oh, did you break the National Registry Code?
That's a real thing, by the way. That's,
I know.
The first time I've ever heard about this.
I guess we're still friends, but I mean, just like life, and they have kids and we live far away now. But someone that I went to high school with, actually, I think you know this person too. Both her parents were professional clowns. And so she and her sisters also did some clown work.
If I know this person, I don't know this piece of information.
Okay. It is like
tell me after we're done
I'll
recording.
Tell you after we're done recording, because it's not my business to like put it out in the ether. They can tell who they want to tell. But so that's my one. Well, I was going to say my one clown connection. No, I worked at a haunted house that clowns were big thing.
That's what I thought. There's going to be somebody from the haunted house. No. Now I'm going to go to a small group of individuals.
I will have to ask Clown One, though, if he has his makeup registered.
Clown One.
That's what it's. I'm not going to give, again, I'm not going to give real names out here. That's his character name. So that's so funny. I'll have to ask. Now I'm curious. Now I'm going to like text him and be like, do you have your makeup registered to the National Clown Registry?
So like, I'm not a professionally performing clown. I'm a professionally performing spook person.
Yeah, but I'm curious.
The Clown Association of America.
Yeah. So that wraps up that storyline. We then go to work, and Nick makes an appearance in this episode.
It's a fleeting moment.
Fleeting moment with Nick. And they've been processing Mindy stuff, and they found no blood. Like, there's like no blood found on any of her clothing. And again, they're like, how was she able to stab the victim 6 times and have no blood like anywhere on any of her items? Greg Sanders enters. We learn that the skin collected from her scalp when Sarah was processing her comes back to A1. I think Nick said that this was the best name of a character on this. I mean, it is pretty good. Come back to A1. Riley Boom Boom Ronaldo. But the blood on the skin is the victim's. Ba-da-da.
This is actually both a really great and terrible piece of evidence at the same time.
Okay. Do we want to talk about it now, or do we want to talk about it?
No, we can talk about it now.
Let's talk about it now.
I think the implication is...
The implication. We're both so tired.
It's been a long day. Long day, long night. The implication is, like... Oh, you got this piece of skin on you from this person, and that piece of skin already had this piece of blood on it.
Yes.
And so therefore the person. But I don't know that there's a world in which we can rule out the possibility that you got this piece of skin on somebody and then you got that person's blood on it.
Right.
And yes. then somehow this is like we collected this piece of bloody skin, but like, and I think the argument in court would be like, what's more likely? That there was not another drop of blood on this person.
Yeah.
Or their blood came off of this person, this other person. And so I think that it's good evidence, but it's at the same time, probably going to be a linchpin of any good defense lawyer's argument.
Yes, I would think so entirely. Yeah, I think if you could afford a good lawyer, you'd probably, if this is the only evidence that they end up being able to gather, you'd probably be able to get out of
which
it.
Which is all we really get, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there's motive.
Yes.
As well. So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this brings Jim Brass, Grissom, and Wark, but not Nick. Nick gets his one.
I have this theory that Nick had another scene in this, but his comment about trainees was so inappropriate they had to cut it. Because that's typically how
they're like, oh no, even that is too much for us. So instead, Jim Brass, Grissom, and Wark are back at Ronaldo's, and he already has a new girl who is dependent on him, and they say as much to him, and he's like, well, you got nothing on me, and they're like, actually, we have your skin and the victim's blood and we have motive. He was getting people clean, and the only way that you control people, and especially women to have sex with, I don't even like saying to have sex with, because it
manipulate women.
Yeah,
with
I think
bodies
it,
for
yeah because it like borders, if not fully crosses the line into non-consensual activities in some way, almost.
Yeah, I would say it's predatorial at the
bare minimum predatorial practices. And so
the extent to which someone is allowed to trade their make a decision, I don't want to call it sex work, but like choose to have sex with somebody in exchange for whatever they feel like they want to is fine. But obviously these people, like when you have an addiction and you're taking advantage of that, you're taking advantage of people.
Yes.
It's in the term. You're taking advantage of people.
Yep. I agree. And so they cuff him, they take him away, and Work asks, like, what are we going to do with this new girl, essentially, saying, like, they could take her into lock, you know, put her in lockup, put her in lockdown. Grissom's like, she's already in lockdown, and they just leave her there.
So, I mean...
Why?
They didn't discuss, any other kind of opportunity, mental... health halfway house. I don't know.
Get her committed.
Bring her to a hospital. Get her detoxed.
Yeah.
Nope.
Just leave her in the squalor of this house. Like it's very
2025 of them.
It's very 2025 of them. It makes me so sad. We then have Grissom with Mindy, and he lets her know that she's free to go, and she aptly says, "Go where?" Ed is dead. To her, she doesn't have the halfway house anymore. She does technically still have the halfway house. Yeah. But to her, Ed was the halfway house. And so with Ed no longer at the halfway house, that's like not in the picture for her. And then she was, selling her body to Ronaldo to get drugs and stay at his place. And he is now in lockup. So she's like, I don't. And this again, no resources. No, like,
yep.
Here's a hospital that you could talk to, here's a program you could consider. No, just let her just walk into the abyss.
Or even ask, is there anyone you can stay with? Presumption of
why whatever.
I will say there's a good line earlier where they're like, perhaps like you're doing the drugs to forget, implying that like, oh, you murdered the guy.
And yes, like, yeah.
But like that's actually rings true, is that she got clean because of Ed and she's not forgetting murdering him. She's escaping him.
Yes.
She can't live with the grief.
Yeah,
of the memories of knowing him, of all that. And so she turns back to this vice to check out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or they call it getting off, the end of the episode, right?
Yep.
Which is also, I think, supposed to be a pun on
the clown thing.
Yeah.
100%.
The drug addicts refer to themselves as getting off by taking drugs.
Yeah.
A number of times, and all I can think is I don't remember this being a term, but it doesn't mean it wasn't, but
I was thinking of it as like getting off the drugs, like they were using the Ibogaine to get off.
I was like, I don't know, man, I was getting off.
Oh yeah, maybe
they use it like, you know, like getting high.
Yeah.
Use the term like you would use the term getting high.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe that was a thing at that
time. Maybe it was. I don't know. I was essentially straight edge at this time, so
I was
not into the drug lingo. I don't
drink alcohol at this point in my life.
I was just starting to drink alcohol at this point, but now I don't. So
yeah, I didn't drink alcohol until I was like 25, 26 years old, because I just have come from a family of alcoholics and just didn't ever want to
follow that path.
Yeah, I just didn't want to be that person. And I think I think the first, I say 25, 26. By that point, I had had wine at a wedding or something.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve a few times. And I was like, all right, nothing bad is coming.
Yeah.
Has come of that. And slowly got dragged into it by a friend of ours, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, my fun story is I also came from, I came from a family of addicts. And same thing. I was like, nope, not going to be me. And then I was a 17-year-old dating a 21-year-old.
Makes sense.
So.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't start heavily, start heavily drinking until much later.
Yeah, the location you and I met, the person who brought me to that location.
Oh, yeah.
Who basically was like,
yeah.
We were playing role playing games, and then before I knew it, I was hanging out at a bar and doing that.
But that's how we met, so
it worked out well for me.
It worked out fine.
I don't talk to that person anymore. It worked out well for me. I just don't.
Life happens. It's been a long time. And you would think that this is where the episode ends, but it doesn't. We have one more scene. We have Catherine leaving HQ, and I put into Krycek's car because they don't say his character's name again in this episode. And so Krycek is what I know from as the X-Files. I was like, well, she got into Krycek's car. So she gets into Krycek's car, and they're going to order some room service. They drive off together.
I was disappointed at the scene only because we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks, whatever.
Episode. No, last week. Yeah.
He's only in like 6 episodes.
Yeah, he's only like 4 to 6 episodes. He's
number 2.
Not in very many more episodes.
He's in it for about 8 seconds.
He's in it for like 8 seconds. This is true. But they wrap up the episode. And so that is the end of our episode. So Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
I will say, reviewing this episode, there's just a lot of cringe in this episode. And I just sort of like let it go because I think I had come to terms with it.
Yeah, you're like, it's the times.
There's more silver lining to this episode than I think maybe I gave it credit for.
Yeah.
But I gave it a 2 and a skip because I was just like, by the time I finished getting this episode, I was like, oh, this is just so bad sometimes. Like some of the characters are bad. The acting is bad. The names are bad. I don't know. There's like so much, but then there's more good in this episode than I think I thought I knew. But as I mentioned to you right before we started recording, I better write down my score because I don't want a recording to color my rating.
Yes.
I think that like maybe it's a little bit better than I would at least pull off the skip and say you can watch this episode, but like maybe someone should preface that this is a dated. There's a lot of datedness to this episode.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm 2 out of. I was like debating, like, oh, do I give it a 2.5? No, I'm not going to give you a 2.5. You deserve your 2. And
you, Jamal,
and all your references to trannies deserve your 2. There are a few good scenes. I wish they were in a different episode. It feels like CSI is good, or one of the ways in which I like CSI is when they have these like fun little quips but I feel like they spent the entire episode trying to have fun quips.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make for a good episode.
They're like, oh, this episode, I got an idea, guys. I've been out drinking all night. What if we have a clown
and a mime fight? A
clown. They're gonna have a fight. The wife's gonna leave with him. They're gonna leave him a drink.
Like, just
that's the B plot, right?
No. That's main. That is
okay. What's the other plot? Oh well, we got this guy named Jamal. He trashes his car. He's high as a kite.
Yeah.
They don't give him any medical attention. They immediately start investigating him for murder.
Yep. And And then we have a victim who I think is a good guy, but in that video, he comes off as such a weirdo that I have serious concerns about
him. Serial killer vibe.
So serial killer vibe.
Also, real like insinuation that homeless people are going to murder you if you show up.
Oh my gosh. That's what, you know, between quote unquote again, tranny town, I probably should put a warning ahead of this episode and just be like, we're just using the language in the episode, not our own. This does not reflect the views of the host of Who Are You? A CSI Podcast.
If anything, we're trying to demonstrate how preposterous.
Yeah, I'm speaking, and I don't speak for all, but I am speaking as a transgender person.
True.
I don't appreciate the language used in this episode. And yeah, so I think if you want to watch it, fine. If you skip it, I don't think anything major is coming out of this episode that, you know, there's just like one or two really good scenes. And then otherwise it was just,
I guess, like,
weird and uncomfortable for most of it.
The Kevin Griggs scene, like,
was so good.
The evidence revolved around, but like basically none of these scenes needed to be in this episode.
No, that's what I just feel
that's
like.
Why, just... That's why I feel like Give It a Skip is like everything good about this episode is agnostic to the plot.
Yes. Yeah, you could put it into any episode and it would fit.
Choose some 3.5-er from earlier in the season.
Slot it in.
It's the storyline for this one, and this would be a 4 or 4.5.
Yeah.
Because those would have been great scenes to just round it up.
Yeah.
Instead, we got this train wreck.
I don't know. I don't know what they were trying to do. Listeners, let us know what they were trying to do. And if this is your favorite episode, tell us why. Like, I'm always curious to hear the other side, especially when Nick and I agree. I'm always curious to hear the other side. I don't want anyone to listen to our podcast and feel bad that they like an episode that we don't like. I'm curious. Like, I'm legitimately like, I want to know.
The airplane episode, at which point I don't think this is the podcast for you.
Yeah, no, oh my God. They probably stopped listening.
Actually, I don't even think that's my least favorite episode anymore, so I shouldn't say that.
I think it's still my least favorite episode. I think so. I think.
I feel like I give that more of a pass because it was a new
show. It's like so early. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, I've seen what you can get wrong in 4 seasons.
You've had plenty of time to learn.
3. Yeah.
Well,
maybe next episode will redeem us.
We'll see how we feel about how they handle everything in the next episode when we return next week to talk about season 4, episode 17, XX.
Only 2 X's?
Just 2 X's, not 3. Just XX.
It was very off-brand, but...
Yep, just XX. So, until then.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.